Welcome to this online interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our very special guest of honor today is Mr. Rufus Freer-Smith. He's the project director of Kühne & Nagel, and he's based in Jakarta, Indonesia. First and foremost, Rufus, very welcome to this interview.
Thank you, Bo. Nice to be here.
Yeah, good to have you here. I always allow my interviewees, Rufus, to elaborate a little bit on their career. And how come you, as an Englishman, I believe, ended up in Kühne & Nagel, which is a German company, and in Jakarta? Why are you not in a bank in the city?
Great question, Bo. Life happens, right? But I came into the industry pretty late. I mean, mid-20s. When I was younger, all I wanted to do was travel. So I spent a few years traveling from the age of about 18. Then I came back to the UK. I went to university. I got a degree. And I realized that I wanted to continue my life traveling. And, you know, there was not that many things you could get into that would allow that. I gravitated towards sort of kind of shipping and logistics. Based in London, got an opportunity with FH Bertling at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a sort of up and coming, in the vanguard of the product forwarding industry.
Oh yeah.
At the time in the UK, so I sort of kind of went from there. Worked for them for 3 or 4 years. Worked on some interesting products. As the Soviet Union was opening up, or former Soviet Union. Particularly sort of Central Asia and stuff. And then I got an opportunity to work with a shipbroking company. So I did that for a couple of years, also in London.
Yeah.
And then an opportunity came up to move overseas, which was with Barwell at the time, Williamson Company.
Yeah.
And that was in Egypt. So I grabbed that, moved over to Egypt. Did about 3 years there, and then from there I was in Istanbul for a year, also with Barwell.
Wow.
And then Bertling came back and said, we're looking for someone in Singapore. So I came out to Singapore around 2003. Small office at the time. We got going in Singapore. We opened up in Malaysia, and then there was a group of us, including the team in the UK. You know, DHL were looking to sort of beef up their product division.
Yeah.
So we went over to them in 2005, and I was sort of heading up sort of Asia Pacific for them, and then did that for about 5 years, and then I came sort of back into the shipping side, set up a agency commercial representation for a couple of heavy lift carriers. Combo Dock and Roll Group, let's say, Roll Dock.
Okay,
so I worked with the Olsen family, representing their vessels in the region here.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I was in Singapore for about 12 years in all, so covering this region.
Yeah.
And then the market kind of was falling off, particularly in oil and gas. So I was very focused on oil and gas, and things were going south. And then Kühne & Nagel were looking for someone, so I came and joined them. I actually went back to the UK for 1 year.
Okay.
And then Canada opened up and they needed someone there, so I moved over there and ended up being in Canada for 10 years.
Wow.
Initially with Kühne & Nagel in Toronto, and then I moved across to Calgary. That ran its natural life, and then Swire came calling. So I've moved across the Rockies to Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
Thought I was getting into a nice sort of quiet line of shipping, you know, South Pacific. Thought I was going to see some nice islands.
Sure.
And then after about a month, they said, "Oh, you know, we'd like to get into projects."
Uh-huh.
Okay, here we go again. So somehow I always should somehow gravitate back towards projects.
Yeah.
And then so I helped them to get started with Swire Projects. And then things were going very well. The pandemic was an incredible place to be on the West Coast.
Oh yeah.
Found myself getting involved in moving containers with bulk carriers and And then eventually, we got some MPPs, and things went along for a while. And then, sort of out of the blue, I got a call from Kuningan. We're bidding on this project in Indonesia for a gas project in West Papua. And I thought, well, why not? I don't have a lot of that many years ahead of me, and I'm not going to get that many more opportunities. So I put my hand up, and here I am. So, yeah,
That's
it's good.
I gotta say, I've been listening in awe about your career here. I mean, you've really been everywhere, and you've been with some very big boys, also smaller boys, and both agency, project, and ship
Yeah.
owner. I mean, you've seen the whole plate, haven't you?
Well, you know how it is. The more you do, you realize the less you know, actually.
Definitely.
The more you travel, the more, humbling it is, actually.
That's
So,
very well said. I mean, shipping is one of the places where you never finish learning, and if you think you know it
never.
all, then it's time to find something else. So.
You can never learn enough. I mean, my mentor is a guy called Peter Ferdinand. He's 86. And he still works, he still it keeps him off the streets. He keeps him active, and once you're in it, it's hard to get out, because your friendships are global, and it's a little bit addictive in some ways.
Definitely,
And
definitely.
it's just it's so interesting, because if you're just sitting at home and looking at the wall, that gets pretty boring after a while. So I think if you like to travel and engage in the world and be involved in interesting things, this is good business, actually.
Definitely, Rufus. I must say, very impressive to me. And I think you and I are now, let's say, with respect of a certain age. And I
Indeed, yes.
one of the things I know that is, let's say, plaguing our industry a little bit is how to attract new talent, because I know that's one of the things that you're also interested in. How do we get youngsters to join us, so to speak? What's your intake on this?
Yeah, this is a challenging question. It's not an easy industry. So it's you I think the key thing is not to pretend that it's sugar-coated and everything's wonderful. It does take some character. You have to be willing to make some sacrifice.
Oh, definitely, yeah.
But I think the rewards are good. So how does one engage with youngsters who are coming in, or what, they have maybe different things they're being offered, technology or banks or whatever. I think the reality is, like, there are countries, economies where maybe there is not a lot of opportunity,
No.
or less opportunity, but there's a lot of hunger. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to find people from maybe slightly less developed countries, or that have to have a desire to learn something,
Yeah.
and have an appetite to develop. And so I think that's you can find talent there. I mean, of course, coming from Northern Europe like yourself,
Yeah.
you would like to think that you can find talent from your home country. We're always competing with different parts of the shipping industry. But if you look at sort of the future, with AI, with the technology, some of these roles, they probably won't be there in the future. But I think things like, particularly in projects, these are less hard to these are harder to sort of tie down and let robots run it. So I think there's always going to be an opportunity there. We can engage, I think, with educational institutions, schools or universities. I think the companies themselves also have to sort of make an effort to build programs that attract people.
To give people a
And
chance
that's,
to.
yeah, and to invest some time. I think HR needs to invest time in making the industry interesting and known, because I never knew anything about the product industry growing up. Nobody, you heard a little bit about shipping and stuff, but it's not an industry that's very well publicized or explaining how it works, or if you,
I
the only time you hear about it is maybe when you had the pandemic and suddenly people knew what shipping was,
Yeah.
but before that they don't really know about it.
You're absolutely right. I mean, one thing I liked by the Ever Given going across in the Suez Canal was that finally people woke up to see that, hey, where's my Samsung television? We take everything for granted, and although seaborne transportation, I mean, can you imagine the seafarers going on strike for a week? I mean, that should wake the world up to what we
Yeah, for
do.
sure. I
So.
mean, and it does happen, but more so with, let's say, shore-based unions, but you never see the shipping industry itself never goes on strike. I
No,
mean,
exactly.
it's usually maybe, yeah.
May I ask you, Rufus, do you in
Yeah.
Kühne+Nagel, where you're working now, do you have a trainee program? I mean, Kühne+Nagel is a world famous huge company. I suppose you would have, let's say, trainee positions that you place then abroad in your offices. Is that so?
Yeah, I mean, particularly in the sort of traditional markets in Europe, I mean, they still
No.
have the concept of apprenticeships and stuff like that,
That's
and
it.
but particularly freight forwarding is a bit of a, it's hard to explain in some cultures. I mean, things like engineering or other aspects of shipping are e maybe easier to sort of attract people.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, we certainly encourage young talents, and but it, I think it is it generally a challenge to find and attract talents. I think it's an industry issue that I think, as I said, in the home markets, in Europe, and is more the tradition to go and do an apprenticeship, but that's not necessarily the case in, let's say, parts of Asia or the Middle
No,
East or South
no,
America, so
definitely. Yeah,
yeah. So I think
it
we're all competing. We're competing with other industries. We've got to make it more accessible and interesting, because it is
yeah.
it's a fascinating business. There's not
Yeah.
many businesses which where you can travel around the world and have a
No.
career, living in
No.
different countries. I mean,
No,
pretty amazing.
I mean, you are certainly a case in point that supports that argument, and the same. I've also been traveling a little bit like you, not as much, but I certainly believe the more you travel, the bigger the world grows on you, and you learn a lot. And in shipping, you can always get another job because you know a little bit about everything. Thing is, how do we sell it to our youngsters? I have a couple of youngsters myself, and they are into Google or Facebook or these kind of IT things that I hardly knew about, or I guess you also hardly knew about in the past. Maybe
Sure.
that's the attraction there, that they can sit in California and develop some software, you know. So, but turning back to a little bit the real shipping business of which you are certainly an expert, Rufus, project director in Jakarta. It's a huge country. What does a project director do? Elaborate a little bit on what do you actually do for such a project? What's your role there?
I mean, I came here specifically for one product,
Yeah.
which is a carbon capture product for an LNG facility
Okay.
in West Papua, which is what used to be called Dutch New Guinea. So basically, it's the island of Papua,
Yeah.
and it's a very remote region. My role is basically was to come here and to execute the contract which Kühne+Nagel won
Yeah.
last year,
All right.
and basically build a team up. We have a team now of about 25 people. We're
Wow.
operating across about four locations in Indonesia. Indonesia, as you know, it's a huge archipelago with about 17,000 islands.
Yeah.
And so there are no highways or rail lines connecting those islands. So everything's moving by ship or by barge or LCT.
Yeah.
And so basically, we have a few marshalling areas where we consolidate cargo, and then we are operating vessels on a time charter and operate, basically managing those movements from mostly Java to Papua, to the sites. And then in the site itself, we are operating, we're doing all the site logistics. So we have to provide the stevedoring services. We lease all the equipment, the mechanical equipment, cranes, forklifts, telehandlers, trucks, to bring all the operators and drivers for that. So we at the site, we'll have about 100 people. So basically, my job is to try and pull all that together. And obviously, sort of move around, making sure that we're set up correctly we're working with local partners. A lot of the cargo itself is sourced domestically, but there's still international cargo coming in. So there's also modules. They're building modules in Batam and Bintan, so they have to bring a lot of material in for that. And at some stage, we'll be moving some of those modules. And yeah, so it's just really bringing all that together, and building a team.
It's very impressive. I mean, Indonesia, as you mentioned, 17,000 islands spread over. I think explaining to people how big Indonesia is from east to west, especially to I'm from Denmark, and many years ago I lived in Lombok, as I mentioned to you, and they couldn't understand, coming from a small country, how big it is.
It is big. I mean, it's from the most east western point to the eastern point, it's probably 6 or 7 hour flight, so it's and some of the islands are a lot bigger than you think. They look bigger than they look on the map. Because Sumatra is about 500,000 square kilometers, so Java is the size of England because 160 million people. I mean, and then you've got Kalimantan, it's also not small. So
Maybe you can have British Rail to come and help you. No, joke aside, it's just an internal joke, as you know. what kind of quantities are we talking about, if that's not a trade secret? I mean, how much equipment are you going to move into this project? That this must be enormous. I mean,
Our scope will be about 800,000 freight tons, I guess. So the volume is one thing, but it's the sheer volume or frequency of movements. Because I mean, the vessels we have, I mean, we have sort of one multi-purpose ship, which is a sort of EF type, and it's about 13,000 deadweight. But we have a whole bunch of LCTs and stuff, which have a much smaller capacity. And at some stage, we'll have more MPPs. But it's just, if you look at the amount of pork bulls we probably do in a year, it's probably 150 to 200. So because of the, all the different marshalling areas, just the frequency of the movements. So the logistics of that is more significant in some ways than the volume, because we also have to arrange all the stevedoring, but to provide the manpower, we have to sort of abide by all the conditions for the oil and gas regulations. And
They're tough on compliance, I suppose.
they love regulations here for sure.
It's sometimes you have a feeling that the EU had a hand in the oil and gas business, because there are certainly rules for everything, right? May I ask you, Rufus, being located in Indonesia and in charge of a big project like that, the manpower you have, I mean, alone controlling the manpower, that you get the right people, I mean, you're almost like an HR, you are like an octopus, you have to be everywhere, I suppose.
I mean, you're nothing without the people, particularly as an asset-light company. So it's really important that you pay attention to the type of people you're hiring. It's a mixture of getting experienced people in. Even though a lot of the cargo is sourced domestically, the end client is a international, oil major. The EPC is a major EPC, from Japan. They have an international standard. So you need that mix of people who have had international experience, but then you also need to obviously find talented local people. And Indonesia has a lot of good people. It's just a question of harnessing that talent. And you also want to leave behind a legacy. You don't want to just like come in the bunch of expats and leave
No.
when it's done. You want to be able to pass some of that knowledge on. And so
Yeah.
I think that's the sort of the contracts the government there is, you know, they want to see, and they do regulate it quite strongly in terms of enforcing local content. And you
Local
know,
content.
when I come here as an expat, I have to have a local sponsor, and part of the deal is that I pass on some of that knowledge, and, which is good.
So I
Yeah,
think
so.
that I'm quite sure you're the man for the job. Otherwise, you wouldn't be where you are, Rufus. If I turn back to the shipping industry overall, you know, in recent times, you see some of the major ship owners trying to act as forwarders, yeah, in effect, buying up forwarding companies and trying to do what you do, so to speak, in Kuehne+Nagel or like other forwarders. How do you view that some of the ship owners now want to act like door to door and be forwarders? Will they be successful? They have a lot of money after the corona to spend on whatever project besides shipping. Will they be successful? And how do you view that sitting in a major freight forwarding company?
Yeah, I mean, I think they can, if they have the right strategy, you can be successful in anything, really. But and as you say, they have a lot of cash. It depends how they do it. I mean, you know, you've got some companies like Maersk. They want to go and acquire a lot of different companies, which I think it's a lot harder to kind of integrate. Whereas if you look at CMA, they've gone and bought a global scale forwarder, Ceva, which in some ways sort of makes a bit more sense because they immediately have scale. And then you've got sort of MSC that they have Medlog, and which is more, I don't, sort of probably supporting their own logistics. It's tricky because a carrier has a certain mindset, and it doesn't always translate to offering integrated logistics service. So I think it can work under the same umbrella, but they've got to allow it to sort of run independently. So it's almost like run it. It's like a hedge, basically. And I think eventually, I mean, certainly in certain industry like containers, some of that can be done in an integrated way, as long as they're not too complicated. When you add a lot of complexity into the equation, that's where I think, maybe some of the carriers struggle a bit. And then, vice versa. I mean, if a forwarder wanted to become a carrier, same thing. They've got to keep it separate as a separate entity, I think. I think if you approach it like a conglomerate type of style, then it can work. But if you try to integrate it, I think it's quite tricky to
Well,
translate.
I mean, if what I hear from the grapevine when I interview a lot of forwarders is that first of all, you have to have somebody that actually picks up your phone when you give them a call. You know, I mean, simple things like that. It's everything is like, you can just go on the website, and right now a lot of people are calling. I mean, that's one thing I don't understand. But some of the shipping lines.
That's right. Because I mean, ultimately, the forwarder, they offer service. They provide a service. Yeah, and they're nothing without the people or their customers. Whereas, a carrier, particularly when the market's strong, they can be a bit sort of dismissive, and customer service is not their natural place, I would say. We all have a role to play, and it's a question of, it's an age-old question. Since I've been in the industry, it's always been, the forwarders won't exist, and this and that, the brokers and blah blah blah. I mean, I think at the end of the day, whoever adds value will always exist. It doesn't matter what hat they wear. You know, if you know what you're talking about and you have the right focus, you will always have a place.
Definitely, definitely. Now, but it's like I said, I think we see certainly eye to eye on a lot of things here. It's really interesting to hear from you on this. Turning into a little bit the final questions here. How is I didn't ask yet. How does it feel to live in Jakarta? Of course, you travel a lot, even in Indonesia. But how is the life there in this huge country, living and working there?
Jakarta is pretty intense. Getting a bit advanced in years, it's probably a bit harder than it would have been 20 years ago. I mean, when you go there, it looks very modern. There's a lot of, new buildings, and it all looks fantastic. But the infrastructure itself is still a bit behind. There's not a lot of public transportation, so traffic is still a big issue in Jakarta. That hasn't changed in 25 years, to be honest with you,
No.
probably longer. And so that can be tough. But I mean, on the flip side, the people are lovely.
Yeah, that's
They're
true.
warm, they're honest, they're friendly. There's very little crime, despite there being a lot of poverty. So there's a lot of plus points. And you know, once you get outside of Jakarta, as you know, there's a lot to see. It's a beautiful
Okay.
country. It's very undiscovered in many ways. I mean, most people, they think about Indonesia, they think about Bali, but there's, you know, thousands of other islands, world-class, you know, diving. You've got the Coral Triangle, which is a treasure on earth, you know, and to be fair, they do treat that quite well. You know, they don't maybe have the best environmental record in some areas, but they're definitely getting better. And there's amazing places to see that. And also, it's very reasonable price-wise, and you get very good value.
And food is diverse, and your food and drink and all that, everything is in that way
It's
also.
great. There's a lot of diversity, actually, especially somewhere like Jakarta. I mean, there's a lot of great different types of cuisine. And as you know, Asians love their food. And you know, once you get out to the islands and stuff, you fantastic fish, seafood and stuff.
Oh, yeah, of course.
It's
So,
pretty good.
all in all, how often do, I mean, you're based in Jakarta, but do you go to the
Yeah.
site regularly? How do you, I mean,
Yeah.
I suppose even you're
I've been
sitting.
a few times. I mean, it's a remote area, so it takes to get from Jakarta to the site takes about 12 hours. It's a couple of flights and a boat trip,
Wow.
and you know, so it's closer to Australia than it is to Jakarta, to be honest with you. That gives you some idea of the scale of the country. So yeah, I try to get there every 2 or 3 months. Probably get back in March. This year things will certainly, you know, the next coming 3 or 4 months will start to heat up, and you know, we'll be taking on a lot more activity in the site, so I'll have to get there a bit more often. But yeah, it's really remote area. The nearest big city, you know, it's probably probably a 3 hour flight, to be honest with you. So you know, it's a long way from anywhere.
Talk about logistics. So finally here in one of my final questions here, how long, if I may ask, is your contract, so to speak, and what's next for you? And of course you wouldn't know yet if you're not finished with the contract yet, but how long time are you supposed to kind of finish this contract, I guess?
I mean, I'm signed up until next year. The product itself will go on probably till, you know, end of 28, early 29. So I guess they might ask me to ca carry on. Depends on my family if they're willing to do that.
Of course.
But yeah, I think, you know, for me, like by then, I would have got the team up and running. You know, things would be hopefully a lot more streamlined, and you know. So yeah, I think probably for myself, probably till the end of next year,
Okay,
and
that's
then we'll
good.
see. You know, I'm at this stage of the game. You know, I'm not looking to build a 15-year career, you know, and get up the ladder. So I like to do interesting things. This was really interesting. These are opportunities that they don't come along every day. So I'm very grateful to Cairn that they gave me the opportunity, and hopefully we can. There's other major products coming in the pipeline in Indonesia, so I could hopefully help them to secure more work here, and then see what else is out there.
No, that's incredible, and I certainly hope as many, let's say, in the later years, do they write their memoirs. So Rufus, with your career here, and whenever you decide to kind of step out, do share with the rest of us your career. I mean, it's you've really been everywhere. I'm very impressed. So I need
Oh, thank you, Bo.
to.
No, I follow your blogs with interest, and you know, you're definitely someone who embraces the world, and you know, so I get some inspiration from that. That's good,
Thank
actually.
you. Likewise, I must say. The fact is, my father wanted me to go into shipping. I wanted to be a journalist when I was 17, but he said no. So,
Okay.
in the end, I became
Full
a kind of
spectrum.
amateur journalist.
Yeah.
Well,
That's
you know.
it's great though, because you bring a lot of passion and you communicate well. So and that also is a good way to attract people to this
Thank you.
industry. So
Thank you.
that's good.
Likewise,
Thank you.
likewise, Rufus. I want to say many, many thanks to you for this fantastic chinwag here with you. It was a pleasure to meet you. Thank you, Rufus.
You too, Bo. Thanks a lot.
Likewise.
Okay.
And to all my listeners, viewers, and readers from around the world, this was yet another great interview by Project Cargo Weekly. Our special guest of honor today has been Mr. Rufus Frere Smith. He's the project director of Kühne + Nagel, based in Jakarta, Indonesia. Quite an experienced gentleman, still in his prime, so to speak, and certainly one from which we can learn a lot, all of us. He's tried a lot around the world in different fields of logistics and project forwarding. So do learn from this interview. And from me in Project Cargo Weekly, until next time, I remain thank you and good night. Good evening.